Well, in podcast 898, we're going to a Pete event, a Mayor Pete event here in Jefferson, Iowa, which is, by the way, where the Cruz campaign ended in the caucuses of 2016. And I remember that day. It was much warmer and more pleasant than this day. This is a beautiful day. It's sunny, but it has snowed about 4 inches last night. So it's a kind of a beauty wonder, winter wonderland. So we're going in to this event here in Jefferson. So in podcast 898, Pete Buttigieg here in Jefferson, Iowa. So we're going to walk up and see what's up with this event. It's in an antique store, cool place. Good, how are you? You guys are selling merchandise.
We are.
You got buttons, you've got hats.
Scarves.
You got any of those? Those are the hats we need right there.
Yes.
Yep. Are you selling those? Oh, you got them at the end. Yep. All
right.
I'm sticking with this one.
Yeah.
Thanks. How you doing?
You need to sign this?
Huh? Yes, I do. This is an antique store. I should mention I have a lot of people to thank on this trip. Tony Kiefer for the generator, which I have not used yet, but I have plans to use it when I get to a drier environment. You can't have that thing operating when it's wet. It has been misting and snowy, although it's beautiful today. It's just not, it's not an environment where you can use a generator because it's so wet. So we'll be getting into that. Also want to thank Ben Harris from Sharp Creative, who does some amazing branding for businesses. So if you're, they have a whole process that they use, which Ben will tell you all about. Ben Harris at Sharp Creative. Just send me a direct message on thebobdavispodcast.com and I will get you in touch with Ben. Ben donated $100 and I really appreciate that. Wayne Nelson, $25. This comes in super handy these days when we're traveling. Also want to say thanks for the shares on Facebook. Commenting, not so much. Appreciate the comments have been good. They haven't been off the cuff and they haven't been people that aren't necessarily listening to the podcast. Do appreciate the comments from people listening, and especially when they're on the subject. And I really appreciate the shares on Facebook and Instagram and RTs on Twitter and so forth. And if you want to get the Bob Davis podcasts, if you have an Android device, I recommend Spotify, Stitcher.com, of course, iTunes, the granddaddy for podcasting, and I've been on iTunes since the start in 2009. Tune in, blogtalkradio.com, Lisbon, PodMN, and many, many other places where you can get the podcast at thebobdavispodcast.com, of course, where you can click on a podcast and listen to it. You can subscribe to the RSS feed right up the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, and I appreciate that. So, oh yeah, and one more thing. So I bring my printer with me on these trips because you never know when you're going to need a printer, right? And I hate my printer because I hate paying for those print cartridges. So I'm going to recommend Cartridge World in Maple Grove, across the metropolitan area, Minneapolis and St. Paul, and really across the world. You can call them at 763-420-6632 or click on the banner at the top of the page, thebobdavispodcast.com. They can save you up to 30% compared to the big box retailers. They can get you free delivery, and if you qualify, you can also get a free printer. Cartridge World.
Hey, we're gonna get started here. Thank you so much for coming. Thanks for making it out here. This year, Mayor Pete Buttigieg today. I'm Emily. I'm the organizer here in Green County, and I'm so happy to see you guys. Even me. Helped me welcome in the new year with a home-cooked meal with friends. Thank you to Jack, who makes me homemade soup and makes me tell him that I got home safe. It's an icy driving night. Thank you to the Wilkins, who aren't here but took me in, even though they hardly knew me, welcomed me into their home, and suggested that I reach out to the middle school and the high school, which seems to have gone really well. So, although Matt was already on top of it. So thank you guys all for coming.
Thank you.
Things are getting real. There are only 5 days left until the caucus. If you believe in Pete and you believe in this campaign, we need your help to talk to as many caucus goers as possible. So before you leave today, sign up with me or sign up with another volunteer. We need you to knock on doors, call people, volunteer to be a precinct leader in your precinct. This is the best way that we're going to get people to turn out to the caucus and stand in Pete's corner and turn out. So you should, do all that stuff. and before you leave today, you can also introduce yourself to one of our precinct captains and precinct leaders. So I know we have a bunch in this room from this county and other counties. Y'all should be proud. Raise your hand. Yeah, we have so many. This is awesome. Thank you. I know we also have some temporary chairs. And we appreciate all of you running the caucuses so smoothly, too. So, guys, one more thing. Take out your phones. We want you to text caucus, C-A-U-C-S, to 25859 in order to get updates from our campaign and about the caucuses. So, we need you on this team, and we need you in Pete's Corner on caucus night. Together, we can win the Iowa caucuses, and we can make Pete Buttigieg the next president of the United States.
What a great space, and thank you again to Shelley for the encouragement for coming into this campaign. And it's a story that reminds us of how politics at its best works, which is folks connecting often by chance, reaching out to those they know, and joining this national conversation about where our country is headed. Excited that we got a lot of students with us today too, so thanks for joining. And so glad to be with you as we come into these final few days. I'm seeing some of the same faces that I saw over the summer, around the time of the steak fry, saying things like, you're in my top seven, you seem good, we'll see where this goes. And I've been reflecting on this last year that we have been traveling across the country, and in particular across the state of Iowa, based on this idea that we would be well served as a country if we get Washington to work a little more like our best-run communities before the reverse starts to happen. And this started with four people and an exploratory committee. Our entire offices were smaller than the stage where I'm standing. No personal fortune, no giant email list, no office in Washington. Just that idea, this belief that we could make politics more responsive to our lives instead of allowing it to continue to recycle and recirculate the same Washington mindset that got us here. And now here we are. It's decision time, and on Monday, that decision's going to be made. So I'm here one more time to ask you to caucus for me on February 3rd, to share a little bit about what's at stake and why we are doing this, and to urge you, if you're already on board, to reach out to as many people as you can in order to make sure that we succeed. And I'm going to try to keep my comments very short so that we can have as much of a conversation as possible in this beautiful space. Let me begin by asking you to form an image in your mind that's kind of the controlling image of this campaign. It's what I think about every day. And it's this. I want you to visualize it as specifically as you can. Just picture how it will feel the first time that the sun comes up over Iowa and Donald Trump is no longer the president of the United States. A lot of us are ready for that day to come, right? And a lot of Democrats want to see that day come, but also a lot of independents. And I'm meeting lots of what I like to call future former Republicans, who are just as upset about what's happening in this White House as I am, even if we're not going to agree on everything, ready to bring about a change. And yet, when you really think about how it's going to feel that day, that first day that we're putting this presidency behind us in the rearview mirror, it's not going to be the day that all our problems end. It's actually going to be a very challenging moment in this country. Because on that day, we're going to be divided. We are going to be polarized. We are going to be worn out from politics and exhausted from fighting, probably even more than we are right now. Which means we're going to need a president focused on healing and bringing the American people back together. And at the very same time, we're also going to be a country facing colossal challenges that are only growing deeper in the days and months to come. That sunrise is happening in a climate that is this close to the point of no return, and if we allow it to get there, it could destroy opportunities for a future generation and a young generation here with us today. The sun will be coming up over an economy where they keep telling us everything's fantastic because the Dow Jones is looking good. And yet I think a lot of us are wondering when that's supposed to actually get to our kitchen tables in our communities, where even when pay is going up, it's not keeping up with the cost of saving for retirement, long-term care, and education, and health, and housing. The sun's going to be coming up over schools, where kids are getting active shooter training before they are old enough to learn how to read. That's what we're going to be facing as a country. And so the task of the next president will be not only to make sure we heal and unify as a country, but also to lead us forward quickly, boldly, to deal with these big problems. Because there's not a moment to lose in dealing with it. Now, that sounds like a tall order, and it is. But that's what I believe the presidency is for. So when I'm traveling the state asking for your support, it's based on the idea that the presidency has a purpose, and the purpose of the presidency is not the glorification of the president. It's the empowerment and the unification of the American people to get big things done. That's why I'm asking for your support. And what I'm seeing across this campaign, across the state, and across the country are people who remind me of the issues that are at stake. That none of the things we're talking about in this campaign are just about what you see on TV, who got the best singer off in the debate, the horse race numbers. This is about our lives. Our lives go differently depending on who is in the Oval Office. I was reminded of this a couple weeks ago, passing through the airport, and ran into somebody I had not seen since we were both serving in Afghanistan. I had not seen her since she was injured in an insider attack. The people who wear our country's uniform are ready to do whatever the United States requires of them. That's what's at stake when we talk about ensuring that those who are serving are never sent into a conflict that could be avoided. And what it really means to support our troops is not to have a president throw himself a military parade and then turn around and say traumatic brain injury is no big deal. It is seeing to it that we honor our troops during and after their service. This is personal. When we talk about the issues of climate, as mayor, I got the 3 a.m. phone call, went down, activated our emergency operations center, made sure that things were going well in terms of the rescue operations, and our community pulled through that 1,000-year flood. And then 2 years later, we had another. This is not theoretical. This is happening to us in our everyday lives. When we hear about issues like gun safety and making sure we do something about the epidemic of gun violence that is claiming lives across this country, that is being lived out by students and by teachers, even of Republicans, think we ought to at least be doing universal background checks and red flag laws and other common sense measures that are going to save American lives. This is the moment for us to actually get politics to revolve around our lives instead of expecting everybody to revolve around the circus that's going on in Washington. And as we watch the news, it's exhausting. At least that's how I feel. And I live and breathe politics, and I find it exhausting. I think it's designed to make us want to turn it off and walk away, to make us tempted to give in to that cynicism that is exactly how the status quo would win out. But the great thing about being alive and voting, and in particular being an Iowan in 2020, is you have a chance to send a different message, no matter what they do on the floor of the Senate. It's actually up to us. And this is our chance to reject the sense of helplessness or hopelessness that's emanating from Capitol Hill today, and instead do something that will see to it that once and for all, this is established as a country that no president from either party can lie, cheat, or steal their way into power. And that we're going to make sure politics actually responds to what we need, wanting to see higher pay, demanding that we support our teachers. And by the way, supporting our teachers means having a Secretary of Education who actually believes in public education. Understand. understand that God does not belong to a political party in the United States. The majority who want to see us actually move forward to end endless wars, do something about our climate, keep this country safe, and make this kind of place where our next generation can prosper too. That's what we have a chance to do. But we better make sure that we win. Now, the word written is being thrown around a lot right now in these final days. So I want to point out that the greatest risk we could take, in my view, is to approach an extremely unconventional president and a historic and unique election, trying to follow the same old Washington playbook and mindset that brought us to this point. Remember, if that mindset were working, we never would have got here. A guy like this president would not have been able to come within cheating distance of the Oval Office in either party if things were going along just fine. For us to win the White House, in the last 50 years, certain things have been true without exception in the years when we won. Think about it. It's always been a candidate who was new on the scene and hadn't run for president before. It's always been a candidate who was opening the door to a new generation. It's always been a candidate who did not have an office in Washington, or if they did, hadn't been there for very long. That's been true every single time we've won. And we had better make sure we win this time, because the country can't take another term of this president. So, hopefully that's enough to give you a feel for what we're doing and why. But again, I want this to be more of a conversation than a monologue. So, we've got a fishbowl. We gathered questions from folks as you were on your way in. And I want you to welcome back to the stage Emily from our campaign, who's going to lead that discussion and be your voice.
Healthcare, but at what point are we going to talk more about prevention? There's a pill for everything, but when are we going to talk about prevention?
Very good. You know, I think that there's been so much sizzle in the controversy over Medicare for all who want it, and so on, over who's got the best plan. Of course, I've got the best plan, in my opinion. But you're right, we're leaving aside a lot of these other things. So in addition to advocating for my vision on health insurance, which is to create a Medicare-like program called Medicare for All Who Want It, allow anybody to participate, but let you decide whether you want it and not force it on anybody. A lot of your health is decided or affected long before you cross the doors of a doctor's office or a hospital. It's why things like food policy are so important. Making sure that we make good food available. And there are a lot of food deserts that are emerging, and not just in our cities, but in many different parts of the country, in many different parts of the state of Iowa. And the other thing we got to pay attention to is the relationship between mental health and physical health. Each has a huge impact on the other.
10-year-old Amelia, who asked me what you were going to do about climate change.
All right. I'm glad you're asking, because this is the most critical policy issue affecting our future. It's affecting your future. It's affecting my future. I'm hoping to be around in the years when we're going to look back and see whether we got the job done. You know those big windmills? You ever seen those in the fields? We got to make sure we're investing in more ways to get clean energy, not just wind, but solar and other things we haven't even invented yet. And that means using the federal government to find funding to help people do the research. It costs money to do that work, but it's worth it because it gets us better energy. Send some of those dollars to farmers who can do things with soil and do things with plants that actually take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere.
From Brandon, who is currently a Republican, the husband of somebody who's in the audience, he asks, how will you handle the trade advancements that Trump has made or is working towards? Farmers have suffered through a couple years, or I think it's through a lot, the couple years, and I don't want it to be for nothing.
Yeah. Well, you know, this president's attitude seemed to be to just tell farmers to take one for the team. There's not a game plan here. To say nothing of what he's doing on the corn side with these so-called small refinery waivers that are going to some of the biggest multinational oil companies in the world. So let's talk about what it actually looks like to support farmers. Part of it is those climate investments I was talking about. If we can find billions of dollars to take the edge off of what was happening to soybean farmers from a trade war that didn't have to happen in the first place, then we can find the funding to make sure we're not only encouraging, but financing farmers to use new materials and develop new techniques that can help with the climate and pollution challenges of our time. Now, specifically to the question and the mention of trade, it's why we got to make sure that the trade agreements we enter into are actually good for American farmers and workers and consumers. I'm not going to take a meat cleaver approach on trade. Free trade has a lot of problems. We saw that where I come from. I'm from an old factory town in South Bend, Indiana, that lost so many jobs over the years. And folks came along and said, well, just do this free trade thing and everything will be great. And it was great for somebody, but it wasn't great for us. That doesn't mean the answer to it is trade war. We don't have to choose between free trade and trade war. What we need is a smarter, fairer approach to trade. I think that the improvements that were made to the USMCA were terrific, especially when the Democrats intervened and started negotiating to make sure that there's enforceability. That's a good step. We need more export markets. And that's why the attitude and the approach to China can't be simplistic. I actually think we got to be tougher when it comes to things that affect national security, like electronics and pharmaceuticals. Let's have an actual strategy, not just poking them in the eye and seeing what'll happen. You know what happens? They poke back. And then we tell farmers to take one for the team. Let's actually have an approach that takes farming seriously, takes consumers seriously, takes our trading partners seriously. And when we do, it'll be a better economy for all of us.
I'm a retired school teacher, and I'm horrified by gun violence in schools. What's your plan for protecting our kids and our schools?
All right. The last thing that a teacher should have to worry about, or that students should have to worry about, is your physical safety. Now we're going to ask you to turn into a highly trained armed guard when there's a security threat too? It makes no sense. It's why we need universal background checks. Think about it. Most gun owners, most Republicans, as well as most independents, and certainly most Democrats think we ought to do it. How is it that it hasn't actually gotten done? Right now, I see people rising up to demand something better. On background checks, on red flag laws, disarming domestic abusers and allowing a step to be taken if we know that somebody's a danger to themselves or others. Making sure that we act on those threats that we know are there. Closing the loopholes. You know, right now, if the background check is late, they just give somebody the gun. That's how the guy in Charleston got the weapon that he used for that mass murder. It makes no sense. If you're in a job application process and a background check is late, you don't just hire the person anyway. Right? The sorts of weaponry that I trained on in the military in order to go into a war zone have just no business being sold for profit anywhere near an American school or church or shopping center. It's common sense.
I know you have plans to legalize cannabis on a national level. How are you going to achieve that without 100% support of Congress? This is from Dave.
All right. So this is, again, Dave, if you're here, I'll... There. Here's the thing. This is another one of those things that I think has come to be a common sense position. Not everybody, you're right. A lot of folks in Congress aren't there. A lot of folks in our community still have some questions or qualms about this. But at the end of the day, we're seeing so many cases where the response, the incarceration, does way more. And when you add in the patterns of racial disparity in terms of the way these laws are enforced, it is becoming one more engine of racial inequality, too. In my own community, we now see a generation of kids who have gone through the traumatic experience of a parent being incarcerated, making them more likely to have challenges and wind up dealing with the criminal legal system in a way that did nothing to make us safer. This is not something I would be careless about. But I do believe the time has come for us to acknowledge reality that most Americans get it. And so this, whether we're talking about this, whether we're talking about common sense gun law, whether we're talking about dealing with climate, whether we're talking about just making sure that America gets a raise, increasing wages, these are things that most Americans want, even in conservative states and districts. First of all, let's try to work with members of Congress from across the aisle. It's always worth a try. I did it all the time as mayor. I'm a Democrat mayor in a Republican state. I love working with Republicans in good faith. If that's not working, then that's when you go over folks' head to the people who hired them. Plan A is to be a strong enough nominee, coming from the heart of the industrial Midwest, being a middle-class person who can speak to these issues, that I have such coattails that I arrive in Washington with a lot of allies in the Congress and the Senate to begin with. Just leave you with this thought. The word hope went out of style for a little while in our politics for some very understandable reasons because of what we're up against. It's bleak, it's divided, it's mean out there, and you don't hear a lot of talk of hope. But I'm here to make the case for hope. Have you noticed? Here's a good grammar question for the middle school folks who are here. Have you noticed that the word hopeful, which is usually an adjective, has been turned into a noun in the case of candidates for office? You ever notice on the news they call us candidates hopefuls? I'm a presidential hopeful. That's what I'm doing here. I think that's very appropriate because running for office is, in fact, an act of hope. It's something you do because you believe it actually matters in our lives and in our futures. Who gets their hands on the pulleys and levers of American government and what kind of values they have in mind when they do? That's the hope that animates the country. So wouldn't it be something if on Monday night, Iowa sent a message that we are ready to turn the page with a completely new kind of nominee and a completely different kind of politics to fix things before they're too late? That's what I'm asking you to be part of. That's why I need your support, and that's why I'm thankful for you. So thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for being part of this, and I'll see you on the trail.
Well, we're getting towards spring, and spring means that we have a very short construction season in the Midwest because winter is so harsh and they can't do a lot of work on houses in particular during the winter months. So if you're planning an addition, if you're planning any kind of extensive construction, you want to give your contractor plenty of notice, but you also got to find a contractor that's going to be there every step of the way with you, and that is Randy Grabo at whitetailbuildersinc.com in Andover, Minnesota. Doesn't matter what you're talking about, man caves in the garage, new basements for the kids, get them out of the top floor, a new bedroom suite or a new kitchen. Call Randy Grabo. He loves talking to people about their plans. 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Give him a little notice and he'll work miracles for you for sure. He'll be there with you every step of the way. Whitetail Builders, helping you construct your dreams. Now, in the previous podcast, I suggested that my friends at DepoStar could benefit from the coronavirus situation in China. Really wasn't saying that. I was saying that there are issues with Chinese manufacturing today that didn't exist 10 years ago. Some situations with, intellectual theft and so forth have gotten worse. And of course, the costs in China are increasing. So that means American companies are starting to look around for American manufacturers. If this is you, I'm going to recommend DepoStar, American Design Engineering and Manufacturing. Visit their website at depostar.com. So a mercifully short event for people who cover these things. They can get pretty long, especially when you are up late and then you jump up and run to an event early. So that was Pete Buttigieg, who is, and no one knows how to pronounce his last name. I don't either. So it's Judge. Mayor Pete is what everyone calls him, and he's actually pretty definitely one of the contenders in this Democrat caucus. I hate to call it a race, but that's the idea. So back to the Hy-Vee for some coffee and maybe some breakfast, and then we'll figure out where to go next. Council Bluffs, or I want to try to get Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden before the caucus on Monday, and this is the because Biden, of course, not a senator, but Elizabeth Warren is going to be in Washington, but the senators will be back on the campaign trail like crazy Friday night as soon as they get done, if they can, to get back out here. So we'll be looking this weekend to get all over the state, hopefully in the western part of the state. So, all right, it's time to crank up Mobile Podcast Command and head back over to the Hy-Vee. Thanks for listening to Podcast 898 here in Jefferson, Iowa, on the campaign trail for Caucus 2020 in Iowa.
We're bound to wait all night. She's bound to run a mile. Invested in nothing at any how. To each his own. The garden's sorting out. She curls her lips.